Intelligent Medicine is sponsored by Health IQ, an insurance company that helps health-conscious people like runners, cyclists, weightlifters, and healthy eaters get lower rates on their life insurance. Go to healthiq.com/Hoffman to support the show and see if you qualify. Welcome to today's Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and today we're going to talk to someone who's extraordinarily important in the complementary and alternative medicine movement, and he's got a great new book entitled How Healing Works. He's Dr. Wayne Jonas. Dr. Jonas is a retired lieutenant colonel in the Medical Corps of the United States Army, and he served as the director of the Office of Alternative Medicine, which became the National Center for Complementary and Alternative Medicine at the National Institute of Health from 1995 to 1998. And he has done some military medicine. He is a family physician. But in addition to his conventional medical practice, Dr. Jonas has long been interested in various alternative medicine approaches. He's been an advocate for them. He's done a lot of research on them. He's also been involved in initiatives to get alternative techniques into the military by virtue of his military background. Most recently, he's been involved with the Samueli Institute. More on that later, because the Samueli Institute now has a really, really important initiative at UC Irvine School of Medicine. And we'll touch upon that in just a moment. But his new book, How Healing Works, is about, it's kind of a blueprint for a new healthcare system, which has really been his mission statement through life. So it's a pleasure having you on Intelligent Medicine, Dr. Jonas.
Thank you very much, Dr. Hoffman. It's really great to be here, and I've enjoyed your programs over the years, and it's wonderful to be able to speak to your audience about how healing works.
Well, indeed. So the implication here is in the title. It's a provocative title because how healing works, the subtext there is how healing really works, right? I mean, it's provocative because it suggests that we may be missing the boat on some critical ingredients of healing.
Yes. Now, that is true. We are missing the boat. If all you're doing is just going to your regular doctor and just, engaging only with what conventional medicine provides. I mean, I know because I've been practicing conventional medicine and still do in a system that provides platinum level health care to its individuals, the U.S. military. And I've been doing that for over 35 years and still see patients in the military that does that. And I've learned over the years that there are certain things that I, as a conventional doctor, do really well and certain things I don't do really well. I'm very good at acute disease. I can treat your infection, fix your broken bone, stop a heart attack, remove a tumor if you have that. I can save your life if it's an emergency very often. But when it comes to chronic illness, which increasingly is the primary driver of both cost and people's lives as they get older, especially, I'm not very good at that. I'm not very good at providing the kinds of changes that need to happen in your life that both prevent and treat chronic illness. And I wanted to make sure that people understood that, and they understood not only where healing comes from compared to curing, but also how they can work with their doctor to create a system for themselves which accesses all of that and 100% of healing that's available, and not leave the 80% sitting on the table.
And some of this is directed to the patient, who's an essential partner in the healing process, that it's not just healing as delivered by the medical care system, that important ingredients of healing come from individuals, their lifestyles, even their social interactions, right?
Now, that's exactly right. The data is very clear. The National Academy of Medicine and many other groups have looked at what would happen if everybody in the country had the platinum level health care coverage that my military patients had. The question really is, if everybody had that, how much would health actually improve in the country? And we've actually shown, and others have actually shown, that only about 15 to 20% of health would improve in the country if we simply provided medical care as it's currently practiced. And that's because the vast majority, the other 80%, comes from non-medical components. And those are things like your lifestyle and the social determinants of health.
Indeed. And in fact, there's some really disturbing trends, because America has always led the world, or the developed world, in terms of longevity. And now we're lagging behind the developed countries like Japan, Australia, certain countries in Europe are surpassing us in longevity statistics. And for the first time, I think, in recorded history, we're going backwards. I mean, it used to be that when we set up Social Security, it was an even bet that you were going to make it past 65. And now it's a given. You know, dying before you're 65 is thought to be premature death. And yet we've sort of topped out at about 78 years and change, and we're going backwards. So what's that all about?
Well, that's a very scary thing, actually. For the last 80 years, we've continually increased in life expectancy. And since the 1980s, that has plateaued out. And in the last 2 years, it has reversed. Our life expectancy has gone down. A large part of that, actually, is because of our inability to manage chronic pain right, and the opioid epidemic, which is not the way to manage chronic pain, but is done extensively in this country and has caused rising levels of deaths, opioid deaths, and overdoses. This, along with sort of our failure to invest in the determinants of health, is now starting to catch up with us. You know, we spend over twice as much as any other country in the world.
Per capita, including per patient,
than any other country. Double. It's not only the most expensive healthcare system in the world, it's double what anybody else does. And yet our healthcare outcomes in 9 of the top 12 chronic illnesses are worse. And over the last 20 to 30 years have been declining. And now that's even impacting longevity, where we thought we were doing well. And so clearly we're not getting the value out of the healthcare delivery system that we did get out of it for the last 100 years. And we need to look at where that value is actually coming from and refocus both our lives and behavior, as well as our healthcare system, on those factors.
Indeed. Well, let's take the opioid crisis, for example. Huge, huge problem. And it leads to overdoses. It leads to despair. It leads to demoralization among the populace. And does natural medicine have a place in either prevention or treatment of opioid dependency?
It sure does. And in fact, all of the major organizations, the American College of Physicians, the FDA, the CDC, the hospital groups, are all now saying that we have to use non-drug, non-pharmacological approaches. I'll give you an example of a patient that I saw. I call her Sally. It's not a real name. She's a real patient. And she was military eligible, so she had, platinum-level health care. She was hurrying. She ran a major program at the Pentagon. She was hurrying from one meeting to another, and she got in a car accident because she'd only been on had 5 hours of sleep. She had some back pain, went to the emergency room, got x-rays, and got put on medications, non-steroidals, and physical therapy. Went back to her job, back to her sleep-deprived, busy life. And about 6 months later, was picking up her suitcase to get on a plane, and she heard a pop, had excruciating pain down her back, went back to the emergency room, and then she was put on opioids.
Yeah.
And that went...
Something like oxycodone or OxyContin and things like that.
Right, exactly. She put on OxyContin, she started taking it. Now, at the beginning, she loved it, okay, because it works really well for acute pain, and she says, boy, this is great. And she started taking more and more of it, but then she developed what frequently happens when you continue on those kinds of medications. She developed tolerance, which meant that she had to take more and more, and it worked less and less. And so now she was stuck on the opioids, and she was having pain. And she started sort of the merry-go-round of what happens from doctor to doctor, pain specialist to primary care doctor, in which she had injections. Fortunately, she didn't get surgery because the surgeon in the military don't make surgeons in the military don't make money if they do it. They evaluate you.
So they're disincentivized to do surgery, contrary to what happens on the open market.
That's exactly right. She'd been on the civilian sector. She probably would have gotten or increased chance.
Somebody
would have gotten surgery.
Yeah.
And the next thing you know, 10 years have gone by. She's still got back pain, and she's now addicted to opioids. She's on other medications such as antidepressants and things like that.
And her life is derailed. I mean, she's less functional. I mean, she went from high functioning to debilitated, and possibly, you know, eventually these people go on disability, and that's demoralizing too, as well
that's
as a drain
exactly
on the economy.
Right.
It's a vicious cycle.
She actually had to stop. That's exactly right. She had to stop working, and she was sitting at home trying to figure out what to do. But now she's on multiple drugs. So she eventually came in to see me, and we did what I call an integrative health visit, where we look at putting a team together for her that manages her conventional treatment, you know, that she needs to have that done well, looks at evidence-based complementary practices for pain, such as acupuncture, yoga, tai chi, mind-body practices, and then supports her behavior change with a health coach, somebody that can help her embed self-care kinds of things into her life effectively. And so Sally ended up with a yoga therapist, that a health coach that helped her to embed that into her life. We had to work with her family to make sure she had the time and the space to do it. That was very important. They had to be part of a team. The social support was key. And we had to make sure we were managing her medications, because she was on a bunch of medications, and as she got better, we had to appropriately adjust them. She was also taking supplements, a couple of which were interacting with her medications, so we had to make sure that was done properly. Sally, when she got back from the yoga therapist her first time, she called me up and she said, for the first time in about 5 years, my pain is down to about 2/10. The first time it's been that way in about 5 years. Now, she wasn't cured, but she was well on her way to the journey of healing, as I describe in my book. She had found her own path.
She's more functional. It's not a binary thing, on, off. It's really about ameliorating pain, because pain, you know, we all experience it, especially as we age.
That's exactly right. And she began to get empowered, so that instead of going around getting this treatment, that treatment, the treatment agents, she became her own healing agency. And after about 5 or 6 months of this kind of support and her own self-care, her pain was now down, routinely down below 2, and she even started to talk about going back to work. And so she now became her own healing agent, and it came through that particular pathway, which is not for everybody, but it's the one she found, as a person-centered practice, a patient-centered care practice, we found one that was meaningful for her, and that was able to get her on the healing path and get her back to full function on her own with less and less medications, and she did get off her opioids.
Indeed.
After that period of time.
Well, you know, there's a lot of controversy over this, and you've been involved over the years with the Samueli Institute doing research, which we'll talk about shortly. But lately, the Samuelis, who are philanthropists, Susan and Henry Samueli, they're very committed to advancing the cause of integrative medicine. They endowed UC Irvine, and with $200 million, setting up what's called the Susan and Henry Samueli College of Health Science. And that has been greeted with a certain amount of controversy and skepticism. I recently had the occasion to debate a doctor named Stephen Novella of Yale, with whom you're probably familiar. Mm-hmm. That was an interesting experience, because he had this to say about the Samueli initiative, which you were part of. He said, "This is ultimately a very bad thing. It's putting emphasis and the imprimatur of a university on things that have been discarded as medical fraud for 50 years. So what basically these skeptics are saying is that these are hocus-pocus techniques and that by studying them, we legitimize them, and then we expose medical students and young physicians to these practices, and it's all bogus.
Mm-hmm. Yes, well, you know, this kind of effort is always going to bring skeptics out of the woodwork. You know, when I was at NIH, I had some people on my advisory board who called acupuncture quackupuncture.
Yep.
And then I had people on the other side who thought the National Cancer Institute was about the national conspiracy against cancer.
Right.
Because they thought they were covering, you know, cures up. And the reality is these are extreme individuals. They're more interested in debunking things than actually looking at the science. We now know, for example, that acupuncture works very well. There was just a study that came out a couple months ago in the Journal of Epidemiology demonstrating that for chronic pain, acupuncture works better than placebo, that it works well for many kinds of chronic pain conditions and lasts for quite a while. That kind of evidence won't dissuade the extreme skeptics or the pseudo-skeptics, as I call them. But the vast majority of mainstream physicians and patients realize that when there's good science, that's the way we need to go. And increasingly, there's good science in these areas. In the pain areas that I mentioned, American College of Physicians is not a, it is a very mainstream organization. The FDA, the CDC, they all recommend that things like yoga, massage, acupuncture, mind-body practices should be the mainstay for management of chronic pain, and are recommending it to everybody. So these things really can be sorted out with good science, like anything, any kind of research can do to identify what works, what doesn't work, and what's valuable in these areas. And individuals that are not interested in that research are always going to be out there and claiming either extensive positive effects or negative effects without looking at the research. And the mainstream, however, already knows these are important, is now trying to figure out, how to make them happen in everyday practice and everyday life.
Okay, folks, at this point, I want to allow one of our sponsors to share this important message with you. So listen up. As a health-conscious person, you're going to love our new sponsor, Health IQ. Health IQ uses science and data to secure lower rates on life insurance for health-conscious people like runners, cyclists, strength trainers, healthy eaters, and more. The Health IQ Advantage is their unique mortality model on the health-conscious and lower rates for health-conscious people, like a good driver savings on auto insurance. They also have unique underwriting that's tailored to the needs of the health-conscious, so things like having an adverse family history won't typically drive your rates up. You can actually qualify for up to 33% savings by doing things like taking a Health IQ quiz and scoring elite, having a membership to a qualifying association or gym for more than 1 year, and more. Health IQ believes the best way to improve the health of the world is to celebrate the health conscious rather than penalizing those who are not. To see if you qualify, get your free quote today at healthiq.com/Hoffman or mention the promo code Hoffman when you talk to a Health IQ agent. Even if you don't qualify, Health IQ will use their world-class underwriting team and shop the nation's top 30 carriers to get you the lowest retail rate in the market. So don't miss your chance to save up to 33% in your life insurance, and check out healthiq.com/Hoffman to see if you qualify today. Thanks for listening, and thanks for supporting our sponsors. They're what make Intelligent Medicine a free resource to you. Now back to Dr. Wayne Jonas. At the Samuel Lee Institute, you did a lot of studies, or at least organized and supervised them. Is it particularly difficult to do research on complementary and alternative medicine? Is that part of the problem?
Well, it can be challenging, yes. Many of these types of practices, like mind-body practices or massage, you can't blind them, so you can't do a double-blind study. On the other hand, there's lots of stuff in conventional medicine we can't either. Surgery and psychotherapy can't be blinded, for example. And so we use the best methods and the best techniques that we have to do that. But it does mean you have to understand the practice. To do something on botanical medicine, If you're trying to test it against placebo, you not only do you have to know how to do good, rigorous clinical studies, placebo-controlled studies, you also have to know enough about botanical medicine to know how to standardize the product so you're getting a consistent thing to test. And so that takes extra efforts on the part of the researchers. And when there's, not a lot of money behind doing the research, it moves along, at a snail's pace for the most part.
Right. So some of the studies that may have debunked, say, vitamin C for colds or echinacea for respiratory infections, they've been criticized because they may have used the wrong doses. And, hence not really
That's
applicable
right.
to practice by CAM professionals.
Right. Now, that's correct. It requires, knowledge about both the practice and knowledge about research. I mean, you wouldn't do a surgical, a research on a new surgical technique without having an expert in the technique as part of the team. And it's the same thing in these areas. You don't want to do research on a botanical or on a acupuncturist without having an expert on the team. That doesn't mean they're the only ones on the team. You have to have, a good clinical study person, somebody knows how to design studies, but you have to do that. This is actually one of the reasons why the Samuelis decided to go to a mainstream university like the University of California, Irvine, and say, let's set up a university that can be oriented around the area of integrative health, of whole person health and whole person healing, that puts together conventional, complementary, and self-care lifestyle practices and does it within an academic framework where we can move the research, the practice, and the education forward in a highly credible manner. And so that was the purpose of the gift at UCI, and that's what University of California, Irvine is doing for these areas. They brought top scientists in to look at these areas, and they're using the same kind of academic rigor that they're using for any kind of treatment.
Well, hopefully it'll bear fruit. And ultimately, we don't just expect a rooting section that will endorse every manner of natural therapy that we think works, because some perhaps won't pass muster, but others really should be substantiated, because really barrier to the embracing of these therapies by the medical establishment is, you ask the most conventional doctors, they say, where are the studies? And of course there are myriad studies, they just didn't bother to look them up, but they require rigorous proof that these things work.
It's interesting, Ron, you and I have been in this area for a long time. And you've probably seen this. I have seen in the last 5 to 10 years a radical change in the attitude of the mainstream physician community in these areas. It used to be very skeptical. They Yep. want to fold their arms and say, show me the research. Does it work? This type of thing. And I teach in 2 medical schools. I teach in a residency program. And I can tell you now that the young physicians, as well as the most mainstream physicians, now are no longer asking those questions as much. They're asking, how do I do this? They know that health and healing come from the lifestyle components. They know they come from evidence-based practices. They know they come from the social components that I describe in my book. And they want to know, how do I incorporate this into my practice? And this is exactly what needs to be done if we're going to get a healthcare system that's now restored value to the money we're putting into it, and really both preventing and helping to reverse and treat chronic illness.
Well, that's a very hopeful note on which to pause, because we divide these podcasts into 2 parts. In part 2, I want to get into some specifics about some of the research with today's guest. He's Dr. Wayne Jonas. His book, How Healing Works, tells you how to get well and stay well using your hidden power to heal. I recommend it very highly. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and this is the Intelligent Medicine Podcast.